Welcome to our third episode of Teen Health Matters. Today our topic is going to be on depression, and we have our special guest hosts again today, Patrick Keith and Grace Leachman.
Hi, I'm Patrick Keith, and with my co-host Grace Leachman. And today we are going to be discussing depression. And last time we kind of did mindfulness. That was kind of a lighter topic, kind of to ease into this. And so depression is one of the many mental illnesses teenagers face, and I think it's going to get a little bit heavier today. So Grace, do you want to give your opinions on it?
Well, I think the very important thing to remember about depression is that it's not just a feeling, it's not just emotion if someone feels unmotivated or lazy today. It is a severe mental illness, and it can do a lot of harm. And I think that people need to keep in mind that it is an illness, and they need to treat it as one.
I think that's a massive stigma that there is around it, that it's just these feelings that are, you know, a normal part of life, when in reality it's something more. And so today, to help us discuss that, we have Dr. Larry Wisso, a child psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins. Doctor, thank you for joining us today.
Sure, glad to be here.
Could you tell us, what is depression?
Well, that's a really good question. So when people tell me that they're depressed, I usually turn it around, psychiatrist that I am, and say, well, what do you mean by that? Because although, as you said, there clearly is a disease called depression, there are lots of different ways in which people feel down. I think the core symptoms, though, that sort of span whether it's a disease or something that actually a lot of us feel, at least, you know, for a little bit of the time, are first feeling really demoralized, like nothing's going to work out. The second is a lack of energy. And the third often is just a really pervasive feeling of being angry and irritable at the world, that, you know, which sort of goes along with the first one. Sort of nothing's right and nothing's worth it, and that this becomes something that you just can't get yourself out of. I'd say that's, for me, that those are the core feelings, especially among teenagers.
So what are some of the most common effects of depression that you see in teens?
The biggest ones are that people who have been really going along feeling and being successful in their lives get derailed. So if you think about this sort of constellation of symptoms, so first of all, people who had friends and had things that brought them into lots of social contacts all of a sudden are alienating everybody around them or avoiding everybody around them. The second big one really is that, you know, we live in a world, I mean, where you gotta put out some effort or you have to try to do a lot of stuff. I mean, it's sort of all built kind of around doable challenges, and you've got folks who just don't have the energy or just don't think that it's worth it to try to meet those challenges, and so they give up. And that combination of stuff derails people. So what you see is you see people who've been, you know, cruising along and really sort of doing okay, all of a sudden just not doing well across the board, and especially in the sort of big three areas in which we've got to sort of succeed, you know, our school or our job, with our family and with our friends.
Now, you talked about there being challenges as a major factor in today's world. What challenges do you think teens especially face that cause them to feel so demoralized sometimes through depression? What do you think is a main factor of that?
Well, so I think there are two things that are important. I mean, we've got this two-way sort of relationship with stress and challenges. I mean, we know that stress and challenges that we feel like we can't face cause us to feel depressed. And yet at the same time, we know that depression can sort of happen by itself and color the way we look at things. So if you take that second one first, any challenge looks terrible when you're depressed because you can't remember, you literally can't remember or don't remember the times when you succeeded. You don't remember the strengths that you've got. You focus only on your weaknesses and you focus only on bad things. I mean, that's one of the killer things about depression, is that it changes the way we look at the world. I mean, we, you know, you often hear about people looking at the world through rose-colored glasses when everything looks, you know, la, la, la. But when you're depressed, it's like you're looking at the world through really dark sunglasses and everything looks black. So So nothing necessarily has to change. It's partly the way you look at it. On the other hand, these are not easy times. We know that there's been growing income inequality over the last, you know, couple of decades, and that hits a lot of teenagers. You're looking forward to doing stuff in the world, but increasingly there's this fear that I can't afford it. College tuition's been accelerating way out ahead of inflation. People are having to make impossible choices about where they might want to go, what kind of careers they want to have versus the kind of debt they want to get. There's increasingly this feeling that it's a winner-take-all. You know, society, I got to get into the best place in the world, or anything else doesn't matter. So that stuff going on in the background is not helping.
In relation to how teenagers see the world, what part do you think social media has in the increasing rates of depression in teens?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question, and there are lots of people with lots of answers to it. I think that the two parts that there's probably a fair bit of agreement on is that people spend a lot of screen time, and that screen time is probably not good for you in two ways. One is, it actually is stimulating to your brain in ways that make it hard to relax. You've probably heard this idea that, you know, one of the best ways to make sure you fall asleep is to turn off anything with a screen a long time before you want to go to bed. So there's something biologic about it. But at the same time, we know that paradoxically it's isolating. We think we're spending a lot of time with social media. We think we're spending a lot of time communicating with each other. But in fact, we're actually spending less actual face time with people. And a lot of the stuff that gets communicated on social media is troubling. Any of us have been involved in some kind of a back and forth texting or email exchange that isn't necessarily pleasant, whether that's sort of work related or family related. And it's very upsetting. You can very easily be misperceived. You think you're trying to say something innocent or conciliatory, and it comes across wrong. And so I think that social media contributes to a huge amount of not only angst, but then escalating angst, because the kinds of resolutions you could have if you were sort of sitting in front of somebody, you know, an emoticon doesn't come close to being the equivalent of just reaching out and saying, you know, screw this, I'm just going to give you a hug. You know, that you just can't do it with a smiley face.
And now going off that, so social media, as we've seen, is a major part of teenage depression today. You know, it plays a major part in it. What are some other factors that kind of influence teens? Because according to the organization Teen Mental Health, 1 in 5 teens are suffering from a mental illness of some form, with depression being the most prevalent. So besides social media, what are other ways that students are feeling lackluster, or teens don't feel like they're enough in any way?
I mean, some of this is going to sound very mom and apple pie-ish, although some of it is true. First of all, we know that there's a really intimate relationship between sleep and mood. And the world is stacked against adolescent sleep. So one of the things that happens as you go from middle childhood into adolescence is that the phase of your sleep relative to the sunlight and to sort of day-to-day activity tends to shift. Even if you're kind of an early bird, you know, as a young kid, you tend to want to go to bed later and get up later as a teenager. And then that sort of shifts back a little bit as you get into young adulthood. And I'm sure somebody smarter than me knows why this happens, but it's a factor in brain maturation. So a normal teenager might not feel tired till 11, 12, you know, maybe even 1, and that's not counting the texting or the screen time sort of late or having to stay up for homework. And then, you know, the school bus comes at 6. So you've got people who are walking around chronically sleep deprived. What happens when you're chronically sleep deprived? Well, first of all, you walk around with this sort of chronic feeling that there's something missing. You're not rested. Your memories haven't been appropriately consolidated, so you struggle more with your work. One of the things people sadly do when they're tired is they overcompensate, either with eating or with stuff with caffeine in it, both of which, you know, mess you up in sort of different ways. So one of the real biggies is that you know, we've set up a society, both sort of economically and from a schedule-wise, that really plays into a lot of teenage vulnerabilities. That may be the single, you know, biggest sort of universal risk factor.
So what are some ways that these teens can address the feelings of depression and when they're feeling demoralized?
You know, one thing that is probably important just in case there are any either adults or, you know, non-depressed teens around is to say how, first of all, the people around teenagers could potentially respond more helpfully. So the first thing is that you should actually ask people how they feel. And the same way it's difficult to say, if you're a parent to your kid, you know, are you having sex yet? You should feel free to ask people, gee, you know, you look really down. Are you thinking of giving up? Have you been thinking about hurting yourself? And then don't panic when you hear the answer. So we need to empower folks to ask these things. The second is when we see a friend or, you know, our own kid, if we're an adult or somebody we're around, looking irritable, sort of being withdrawn, maybe not taking care of themselves, rather than first sort of saying bad, we should say why. Because there's usually a good reason, and often it is because someone's, you know, feeling bad. And then, as you said, this is a really, really common thing. So when we find somebody who's depressed, we can share the feeling that, yeah, you know, we've been there too, and say, we know it'll get better. We know you can get out of this. We know it's not easy, but you can do it. For somebody who's feeling depressed, my first piece of advice is just as hard as you can to resist pulling back. You know, the first thing often people want to do is to either just say, you know, screw all this stuff, I'm walking out, or I just want to stay in my room and stay in bed. And try to really resist that because we know it doesn't work. Ask for help. Tell people how you're feeling. And the second biggest one is try to take care of yourself. One of my favorite stories is, I'm sure it's completely made up, but I love it, is somebody asked the famous, you know, meditation, mindfulness, yoga teacher, gee, Swami, how do you do it? I mean, you're out on the road all the time now. So many people want to hear your message. When do you have time to meditate anymore? And the guru, just without a pause, says, well, it's actually very simple. You know, I meditate for an hour a day, except when I don't have time, and then I meditate for 2 hours a day. So take care of yourself. Figure out how you can sleep. Figure out how you can eat right. Figure out how you can get some exercise. That kind of stuff is, plus reaching out to people, making sure you get your hugs, making sure you get your share of doing the kinds of things that make you feel good, that's the first line of intervention.
Now, when feeling those feelings, when should teens be drawing the line? When should they be accepting that they do need help and that these feelings are more than just, you know, mild sadness? When should teens be really thinking about seeking professional help and guidance?
Well, I think there are two easy ones. You know, one is... Well, maybe three. You know, one is certainly if you're actually thinking about hurting yourself or hurting somebody else. The second is if you've noticed that you're off your game. You know, you're used to be doing okay in school, for example, or you see yourself pulling back from stuff. And the third is if it's really gone on for more than a week or two, then it's not just some transient thing. If it's lasting, then you need some help to try to pull yourself out of it.
What are some easy changes that you think teenagers can use in their day-to-day life to counter the increasing amount of depression?
Going back to self-care, I think trying to, you know, set up a regular sleep pattern as best as you can, making sure you're rested, trying to eat a reasonable diet, and especially, you know, laying off the stuff that just kind of gives you a sugar high or, you know, loads you up on caffeine, and trying to somehow balance the sitting activity that you do with stuff that helps you move around and feel good about your body, just the same way other stuff makes you, you know, feel good in other ways.
So as a psychiatrist, what do you see the relationship between teenage depression and school to be? What relationship is there between those two? And if is there any relationship?
Well, I think there's a lot of relationship. I mean, there are two. There's the social side of it, and there's the academic side of it. There's a ton of pressure to succeed. There's a ton of pressure to take on really big academic loads. And there's got to be some way of sort of saying, okay, this is reasonable. It's really hard when you're 16 or 17, but when you're as old as I am, you can look back and say, you know, life is long and there are a lot of pathways. There are lots of different ways to get where you're going. I look around at my colleagues at Hopkins, and they have gotten to their faculty positions at a decent medical school through a million different pathways, and I guarantee you that the minority of them are through Ivy League colleges. So just being able to back off and say, I've got strengths, I've got talents, you know, if I can stay a good friend, a good colleague, and do reasonably well in my work, that, you know, in the long run, things are going to work out. And so I need to, it's okay to sort of put myself at a level of challenge that feels exciting, but is not overwhelming. I think on the academic side, that's that. And then I think on the social side, it's, and this is really hard. You know, I think a lot of us struggle as adolescents, and it's really just hard to take as an article of faith that at some point, if you can't find it now, you'll find your friends. The world just keeps getting more and more diverse the longer time you spend in it, and eventually, you know, you'll find your soulmates. So looking for your soulmates, looking for the folks that like to do the kinds of things you do, and saying, you know, the world's a big place and there's room for all of us.
So what I've noticed in just my regular day-to-day life is that a lot of teenagers have trouble talking to their parents. So from a parent's standpoint, how should they go about this if they find that maybe their teenager may have depression or may have these symptoms?
I think that parents need to do paradoxically two things. They need to both say, you know, I've been there before. I know this is something that's hard, but I know we can work our way out of it, because in the end, what kids want is they want parents who are in charge, or at least they can look to for that kind of wisdom. At the same time, parents have to be able to say, my kids may sometimes fall close to the tree and sometimes fall far from the tree, and I need to support them where they are. They are going to be different. Their pathways to success, their pathways to happiness are not going to be the same as mine, and I have to embrace those things. So both sharing that this is some of life's struggle and we can get over it, but at the same time saying, I can really put myself in your shoes and I'm going to try to see this through your eyes and help in a way that will fit what you think your life looks like right now.
Thank you for all your insight, Dr. Wesso. This was a really helpful conversation, and I think a really important conversation for a lot of people. And just thank you for being here to join us, and thank you for your time.
Well, thanks, Grace. Thanks, Patrick. It was really fun to talk. I hope we'll have a chance to do it again sometime.
As do we. Thank you, Dr. Wesso.
There's one thing you can never have sex without.
It's consent.
Because sex without it isn't sex.
It's rape.
It's on us to stop sexual assault.
Learn how and take the pledge at itsonus.org.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I make learning a privilege, not a chore, and frustration a tool, not an obstacle. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Make more. Teach. Visit teach.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
found a lot of what Dr. Wiseau said in the interview very interesting, and I find that a stem to a lot of problems in teenagers' lives come from the lack of sleep, the lack of a good diet, the lack of exercise. But then it creates an obstacle because as a teenager, you're pressured to do all these things, to play all these sports, to do well in school. But then you also have to get all this sleep, do all this exercise. And I know that a lot of kids don't know how to balance both of them.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an easier idea written down on a piece of paper, being able to tell teens, you know, oh, you need 8 hours of sleep, you need to be eating balanced meals a day, when in reality, you know, we're waking up at 6 a.m, driving to school, we're sitting there for 8 hours, somewhat bored throughout the day, and then when I get home, I know all I want to do is just take a nap and, like, drink a soda or something, just relax. And I think that the idea, in my head, it sounds easy, being able to, you know, exercise, which, you know, I do. I'm able to go out, be social. But for a lot of kids, it's a lot harder. And they don't want to in many cases, because that's kind of what depression is. It's taking away your internal motivation, your drive to succeed, because you feel like you can't succeed. And I think that there are just so many factors these days playing into that.
With depression, I think a lot of this stuff, it's a lot easier said than done. It's a lot easier to say, hey, get out of bed, like, go out, go do these things, like, get some more sleep. But when you actually have depression and you're feeling these things, it's a lot harder to find that inner motivation. And without the inner motivation, it's very hard to do all the things that teenagers are expected to do in day-to-day lives.
And it's unfortunate as well, because when it comes to depression, I personally see it as kind of a mad lib. You know, everyone feels it indifferently. Everyone has different causes. And with other illnesses, you know, you can pinpoint where it originated. For this, everyone has their different factors. And I think for teens especially, we're exposed to, you know, so many social factors at school. You know, who are you going to be your friends this year? Who are you going to be your friends next year? Are you still going to be talking to everyone? And then, you know, you have relationships thrown in there as well, whether it's a significant other or just close friends. You have to be able to balance all that. And in many cases I know of, it's just you can't. And I know, you know, from my personal experience going through high school, I don't talk to some kids that I was really close to freshman year. And, you know, that's unfortunate. And I think for a lot of kids, that transition is just hard, having to go through high school, continually losing people and just having to continually find your own ground each year. And I think that the social aspect is one of the most important. And, you know, you're doing your research on social media. So from your perspective, what do you see in that aspect?
I think social media causes a lot of stuff. And I had just recently read an article about how depression in girls is a lot higher than the rate of depression in boys. And a lot of it is because you see only the highlights of a person's life on social media. You see all the good times. You see all the pictures where they're looking good and they're happy and they look like their life is fantastic. When in reality, it's only just snapshots. It's only just highlights and peaks of their daily life. And I think, especially with girls, there's already a lot of pressure on how you look and how you respond to things, and there's just for the physical outward appearance side of it all. And I think that social media really highlights outward appearances, and if you feel like you can't compete, if you feel like you're falling behind in that aspect, then I think it can be really hard, and I think it can highlight a lot of things that people are insecure about, and I think that can lead to depression or feelings of it.
Yeah, I definitely see that aspect of social media. My sophomore year of high school, I actually went and deleted my Instagram because I was just getting so bad from my own personal experiences that I just kind of had to let it go. And I really recommend that to anyone, because like you said, you're just seeing snapshots of people's lives. You know, it's not reality. In reality, everyone's at home sitting on their bed watching Netflix while posting a photo. And so it's, you know, those snapshots just aren't reflective of what people are really feeling. You know, you see a girl smiling on a beach, or you see a guy, you know, catching the winning touchdown, but that's not what they're experiencing every day. Those are just those little moments in life that, sure, you know, look great on an Instagram page, but it's also kind of destructive to your own self-image when you see everyone experience that and not yourself. And I think that that also needs to change. And from your perspective, what do you see school playing into this?
I think school has a very large role in this, just because in society nowadays, you're pushed to be the best. You gotta be number one in your class. You gotta go to those Ivy League colleges. And I think that kids go into school and they feel that they have to take the 5 and 6 AP classes. They have to stay up all night doing their homework so that they can go to these large colleges that they might not even like that much, but they feel that they have to. They have to do this. They have to excel. They have to get straight A's. But then they also have to apply to these colleges, so they need to have all these extracurriculars. And then all of a sudden, they're doing homework till 3 in the morning, and then they're not getting enough sleep. And then they're grabbing food on the way to school that isn't necessarily healthy. And then just, I think that school kind of serves as a starting point to all the things that come after it, the lack of sleep, the bad diet, the no time for exercise, and then that leads into serious problems like depression.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the AP things, especially here in Howard County, I'm going to throw this county under the bus because that's where we are. The pressure to academically perform is just so overwhelming for so many students that that kind of consumes your life. And it's unfortunate because at this age, you know, we're so naive. We're thinking straight A's or a, you know, 1400 on the SAT is going to define our success in life. And unfortunately, that's just not true. You know, at this age, you need to be developing your social skills, you know, your work ethics. You need to be able to establish a path for success, not thinking that I got straight A's my junior year of high school, I'm set for life, because that's not true. And unfortunately, you know, that's what's perceived. And I know from my own college application process and probably yours that sometimes, you know, being top in class doesn't always matter. Sometimes it's more about what you can bring to the table, who you are, what you've been able to accomplish in high school outside of class.
I think it's the balance part that most people struggle with. They don't know how to balance all these pressures that are coming through their life, and no one's there to teach them how to balance, because no teacher is going to be like, you know what, I don't think you should be taking the AP classes even though you're getting straight A's. And so I think a lot of people need more perspective of what's important to them, what's going to be more important later in life, and how all this affects them.
Yeah, I think that definitely, I think it's all about perspective. I think we need more examples of life. Dr. Wisso was saying it himself. He's a psychiatrist at Hopkins, and he's saying his colleagues, you know, they come from all walks of life, all avenues. And I think that, you know, Johns Hopkins, one of the top medical schools, it's important to see not all of these people are Ivy League stars. You know, they're people from all parts of life that are coming and succeeding now in a high medical field. And I think that just that example alone is enough for many students to see that, you know, you don't need to be top of your class. You don't need to be ultra performing. You just need to be yourself and, you know, establish that you can accomplish all you feel that you can.
Mm-hmm. I think teenagers need to remember to put their health, their mental health, their physical health first before their academic achievements, their sports achievements, their social achievements. And they need to remember to take care of themselves and how that can be the most important sometimes.
And I think it's important that with feelings of depression and these feelings of hopelessness that people just understand that, you know, it does get better. It doesn't just end there. That's not how you feel for the rest of your life. You know, everyone has a rough patch, and everyone I know has been able to get through it. And I mean, it takes a lot of effort and takes a lot of support, great friends, you know, having to establish that ethic. But in the end, you know, it's really worth it. You'll look back and you'll be really proud of how far you've come, how strong you are today. And, you know, if you are feeling hopeless, just keep going. You won't feel that way. Give it a few months and, you know, you'll look back and you'll just be extremely proud of yourself. So, Grace, any final thoughts?
No, I think I'm good. Just remember, if you're feeling this way, if you think that you might have depression, to definitely seek help. Find a trusted adult, find a medical professional, and try to get the help that you deserve.
Yeah, that's the most important. You know, people will listen. And, you know, if you have those feelings of shame that this is something wrong with you, don't feel that way. People will listen, you will get help, and people will support you. That's what's most important. You shouldn't be, you know, afraid of these feelings. You should be able to accept it as an illness and just work from there. So, you know, thank you all for listening. And we're going to be coming back again in a few weeks for another episode, I believe, on stress. Is that the next one we're going for? Well, I guess we'll all find out then. So thank you for listening, guys.